Welcome to Florida Matters. I'm Bradley George. It's a new year, and a new Congress is already at work in Washington. President-elect Joe Biden will be sworn in a couple of weeks. But here in Florida, state lawmakers won't meet until March. And there will be lots to do when they gather in Tallahassee. At the top of the list, closing a $3 billion shortfall in the state budget. We'll be talking to lawmakers and policy experts over the next couple of months, but first, we wanted to get an overview of what the 2020 session will look like. And for that, we chatted on Zoom with Zach Anderson. He's political editor at the Sarasota Herald Tribune. Zach, starting off, going into the legislative session in March, how is this session of the Florida legislature going to be different from the ones that have come in the past?
Well, I think it's going to be different in the way that all of our lives have been different over the last 10 months or so, and that it's going to be focused a lot on the coronavirus, that really continues to be the dominant issue in our lives and in public policy. So I think whether it's the impact on the budget or discussions about how state officials handled the pandemic and what they learned from it, what they might be able to do better going forward. I think we're going to hear a lot of talk about that. You know, the unemployment system, which failed so miserably early on in the pandemic. I think you'll see some discussion about that and ways to possibly reform that and make sure that it works more smoothly going forward. If we ever have such a huge crush of people needing unemployment assistance, the budget is probably going to be the dominant issue, though. There's the pandemic really took a huge hit on the economy, and that really hurt tax revenues for the state. So lawmakers have a tough task to try and balance the budget and not hurt the economy and not hurt vital services. You're going to see, discussions around everything from, I think, education funding to things like the unemployment system funding, things like relief. And I'm sure there's some people that would still like to supplement some of the federal relief efforts that have been going on. Medicaid is a huge, huge issue. There's been a lot of more people who have signed up for Medicaid as their economic circumstances have worsened and they've qualified for government health insurance. And that most of that Medicaid funding is paid for by the federal government, but the state still has to, chip in some. And the state's share just of the increase in Medicaid is over $1 billion. And so there's talk about trying to potentially cut some of those benefits or figure out a way to, save money in the Medicaid program. So I think the somewhat dire budget circumstances are really going to be the most dominant issue in the legislative session.
So we'll get into those issues one by one as we go along here. But I want to start kind of looking big picture at the leadership in the legislature. The new House Speaker is Chris Sprouls, who is from Pinellas County. The new Senate President is Wilton Simpson from Pasco County. How does it sort of change the political center of gravity to have the two top lawmakers from the Tampa Bay region versus having folks from South Florida or Orlando or North Florida?
Yeah, it's somewhat unusual to have both the Speaker of the House and the Senate President be from the same region. And so Tampa Bay is, potentially poised to benefit from that, somewhat. Usually lawmakers like to, have some hometown love in the budget. You saw, for example, outgoing Senate President Bill Galvano. He's from Manatee County. And he did bring some money for road projects and other local projects in the Manatee and Sarasota area. Now, that was under a much better economic circumstances. I think it will be more difficult for, some of those earmark funds. And even if they do get into the budget, it's possible DeSantis could veto them. So I'm not sure that the Tampa Bay region might benefit funding-wise as much as it would under other circumstances. But it does kind of bring a focus to some of those institutions, things like the University of South Florida or Moffitt or other institutions that potentially could benefit and also will put a spotlight on the issues that are important to those lawmakers. Simpson is a farmer who has supported the agriculture community. Sprouls is a former prosecutor who is, interested in criminal justice issues, among other things. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of priorities they put forward.
And of course, the other big political change this year is a new administration being sworn in Washington. Governor Ron DeSantis, of course, has been a very outspoken supporter of President Trump. And really, it was President Trump who kind of made him in terms of the governor's race with his endorsement. How do you expect the DeSantis administration to work with the incoming Biden administration?
Yeah, like you said, I mean, I don't think there's a governor in the entire nation who is more closely tied to President Trump than DeSantis. So it's going to be a bit of an awkward pivot for him to working with Biden. Obviously, you know, Trump has resisted, you know, giving up power. He's fighting the results of this election down to the end, and he's really, you know, taking aim at any Republicans who go against him. And so you've seen DeSantis, you know, not really welcoming the new Biden administration, not even really acknowledging them. And so it is going to be a bit of an awkward relationship probably at first. I think that tension will continue. And, you know, it's not uncommon when you have a governor of one party and a president of another party for it to be a somewhat adversarial relationship. You saw Rick Scott and President Obama were often at odds. There's not a lot of incentive for DeSantis to really make nice with Biden politically. You know, his base is kind of antagonistic towards Biden. And, you know, many do buy into the conspiracy theories that there was a widespread election fraud and that Biden isn't a legitimate president. So they don't want to see DeSantis get friendly with Biden. And I think we'll see DeSantis being happy to criticize Biden and prove his loyalty to Trump, and how that affects, you know, things that are important to the state of Florida remains to be seen.
So moving back to the legislature, Republicans added to their majorities. Of course, they've had comfortable majorities in both chambers. The GOP picked up 5 seats in the Florida House. They picked up 1 seat in the Florida Senate. Do you expect Republicans to, in terms of the way that they exercise that kind of supermajority power, to act differently in this session than they have in the past?
Not really. I think we'll see business as usual for the most part. It's been a pretty conservative legislature for the last few years, and that will continue. You saw things like the sanctuary cities ban on, you know, minors getting abortions without parental consent, advance under the legislature in recent years. I think you'll see continue to see an appetite for conservative legislation. And, you know, the big difference is that, with super majorities and a greater majority in the Senate, there's less of an opportunity for Democrats to challenge some of these things and gum up the works. So the Republicans haven't had much trouble advancing conservative priorities, and this just makes it even easier. And it also, you know, their big victories in Florida make it easier for them to redraw the legislative and congressional maps when it comes to redistricting. Democrats will have less say over that. And it could make it harder for them to win elections if Republicans draw maps that are, you know, more favorable to them.
A few weeks ago, we spoke to State Representative Anna Escamani of Orlando, a Democrat, somebody who's seen as a rising star in the party. And she made it clear that she wasn't happy with the party leadership in terms of how they performed in the 2020 election. Are we likely to see any of that dissatisfaction kind of play out with how Democrats conduct themselves during this legislative session?
It's certainly a big theme for the Democratic Party going forward over the next year in Florida. We're going to see a leadership election this month for a new leader in the state party. That's going to be significant. There is a lot of appetite for change amongst Democrats. They're pretty disappointed, not only in the fact that Trump won the state by a healthy margin, but they have smaller majorities in the state House, the state Senate, and a smaller delegation in Congress from Florida. So it really was sort of a wholesale, butt whipping that we saw for Democrats in this last election. And so I think there's going to be a lot of debate. I'm not sure exactly how that'll play out in the legislature. There might be some jockeying and some, you know, speeches on the floor of the House and Senate from folks who might have leadership ambitions, efforts to push some issues or at least get some attention on issues that are important to the Democratic base, but I think you'll see it play out more in this leadership race.
You're listening to Florida Matters, and we're talking with Zach Anderson, political editor at the Sarasota Herald Tribune. Our conversation continues in just a moment. This is Florida Matters on WUSF 89.7, and we're talking about Florida's 2021 legislative session with Sarasota Herald Tribune political editor Zach Anderson. So let's move back into talking about the work of the legislative session. And as you said, the budget's going to be a priority, and especially making cuts to the budget. What programs are ripe for cuts by lawmakers?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, they tend to, cut programs that that don't have as strong of a constituency, don't have, folks with as much influence, programs often that, help the poor. Things like Medicaid is probably rife for being cut. Things like education, there's a lot of vocal proponents of strong education funding. So I think if there's anything that could be, preserved or get minimal cuts, it's likely to be something like education. But things like affordable housing, Medicaid, some of those things could suffer. Funding for environmental initiatives often is diminished during difficult budget years. Although DeSantis, the governor, has advocated for some of that funding. So we'll see what happens with that. But I wouldn't be surprised to see some significant efforts to cut the Medicaid program. The state spends an awful lot of money. A large proportion of its budget goes to things like healthcare funding, specifically Medicaid. So that's when you're looking at areas to cut large amounts of money, that tends to be one that gets zeroed in on during lean budget years.
Going back to education, there has been some talk of raising tuition at public colleges. It's remained flat for a number of years. Is that something lawmakers are likely to do, given the fact that they could face pushback and opposition to that from educators and from students and parents?
That seems like a possibility. There's been, under Rick Scott, the former governor, now U.S. Senator, he was adamantly opposed to raising tuition and really, let it be known that he was not going to do it. He put people on the Board of Governors, which governs the Florida university system, who shared his philosophy of not raising tuition. He really, kind of focused on that as a way to hold down costs for people in the state and almost equated it to something akin to like a tax increase. But I think with Scott in the Senate now, it doesn't seem like DeSantis is antagonistic towards tuition increases as Scott was. And I think it is more likely that you see that as a way to help balance the budget, is to make college and university students pay a little bit more. I don't know if that is something that they'll end up doing, but it is certainly a possibility now with Scott not in the governor's mansion anymore. And it is a situation where tuition has not gone up for, about a decade now. So, it is an area where you could argue that, maybe that's something where they could justify trying to get a little bit more money. You can also say, though, that the university experience is not what it was now that you have the coronavirus and the limitations on campus activities and things like that.
So pretty much every state is facing a budget crunch right now of historic proportions because of the pandemic. How likely is it, do you think, that the Biden administration and Congress will offer some kind of stimulus, some kind of lifeline to state and local governments that need it?
Well, that seemed to be the biggest issue in the last negotiations over a coronavirus relief package. And the way that they were able to get that package approved was to take out the help for state and local governments. And you saw, the Republicans in the Senate and to some degree in the House opposed to that. They seem to think that it would help blue states more than red states like Florida, which, you know, have been more aggressive, I guess, about, you know, cutting budgets and trimming them and you know, don't have maybe as large of a budgets, you know, Florida versus New York. It's a different philosophy on, you know, spending. And so, you know, Rick Scott, a Florida's U.S. senator, often said that, you know, that would bail out blue states, but it would also benefit, you know, states like Florida. Florida is projected to have, you know, billions in a budget deficit going forward. So, you know, I think it's still potentially on the table for another round of coronavirus relief, but it shows how difficult it was to get it approved by the fact that they had to take it out to get this last bill passed. So we'll see. I mean, it is an issue where if the state and local governments are cutting spending, if they're laying people off, then that could deepen the economic problems that the country has and limit the ability of Florida and other states and the nation to climb back from this deep ditch that we've been thrown into.
What about options for raising more revenue? We know Republicans aren't fans of tax increases, but I know there has been some talk of either expanding sports betting, sports gaming as a revenue source, or taxing medical marijuana, which is not taxed currently. Is there much of an appetite for either of those proposals to get through in this session?
I think there will certainly be some discussions about it, but, you know, there hasn't been, you know, any efforts like that since back when Charlie Crist was, you know, governor, and there was, you know, they raised some of the sin taxes on tobacco and things like that to help balance the budget. It's a tough vote for Republicans to take. They worry about getting hit in primary elections from the right, from people accusing them of raising taxes. So it's pretty difficult politically to do. But there has been some talk about, like you said, you know, the gambling issue, you know, and that's sponsored by, I believe, Representative Brandis, a Republican in the St. Petersburg area, about potentially taxing, you know, legalizing and taxing sports betting. There has been a bill introduced by Republicans to collect taxes that aren't currently being collected on online purchases. You know, some companies are taxed, others are not. And so some of those purchases are taxed and others are not. And you know, there's been an argument made that, you know, that is unfair to brick and mortar retailers and small businesses in Florida if you're not fully collecting taxes on online purchases. But, you know, the alternate argument is that, you know, those are an increase on taxes on people during, you know, a difficult economic period, and that those taxes are being paid by people who might be struggling financially. And so I'm skeptical that legislation will pass, but you never know. You know, the more dire the budget circumstances, the more likely that something like that potentially gets a look.
So another issue that might come up, if we go back to November, Florida voters by an overwhelming margin approved this constitutional amendment to raise the state's minimum wage to $15 an hour by 2026. There has been some concern among Democrats that the Republican majority might try to interfere with the process of gradually raising the minimum wage. Have you seen any evidence that there might be some kind of bill or some kind of process to stall the increase in the minimum wage?
Well, I think the reason that people are thinking that there could be some effort to undermine the minimum wage amendment is because you know, the Republican majority in the legislature has often, you know, worked to undermine these amendments that they don't like. You saw it with the amendment that legalized medical marijuana, you know, that there was efforts to curb that and put restrictions on it. You saw it with, you know, the felon voting rights amendment, where they passed an implementing bill that required felons to pay off all of their fines, fees, and restitutions before they could automatically get their voting rights back. So, and you saw it with the environmental land purchase amendment, where there was an effort to, you know, change how that was implemented by the legislature. And so it's happened repeatedly. I haven't seen details as to anything emerging in terms of undermining the minimum wage amendment or trying to somehow affect how that is implemented. But it wouldn't be surprising based on the legislature's track record of kind of going back and trying to reshape some of these amendments that were approved by voters.
We had a pretty flawless election in November compared to other states. Do lawmakers in the Republican majority want any kind of changes to voting procedures or election law?
I haven't heard that. You know, there is a lot of talk about that in other states and at the national level about, you know, how you implement things like mail ballots, how widespread that type of voting should be, and other types of election reforms. Florida has had absentee ballots for decades. They were used without any issues here in the state during the last election. Florida it was in the unusual position of not having any issues, as you mentioned. I mean, usually the state tends to be known for election dysfunction. We saw three statewide recounts in 2018, and concerns about vote counting and ballot design and how the recount system worked in Florida. Obviously, we had the 2000 election, which put a lot of attention on the state and sort of the dysfunction here. But this last election, Florida was in the position of being able to point to the state as a model, and DeSantis, the governor, really boasted about that. I think he was pretty happy to see no major problems. So I don't know. It is something where things that happen in other states, if it's a, kind of a model ordinance, that Republicans are trying to push in other states, oftentimes it does trickle down to Florida. We've seen that in the past, with election issues, but the fact that Florida didn't have any real problems this cycle, I wouldn't be surprised if nothing really happens on that front.
Something else Governor DeSantis has talked about is been called anti-mob legislation, but it would really target protesters, the kind of protests that we saw last summer following the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis. Critics say it would essentially criminalize many forms of protests. There was talk that legislation might have come up back in November when lawmakers met for their organizational session. It didn't. Is that something that's going to be a priority? Are we going to see that come up during the session?
DeSantis has said it's a priority, and when he rolled it out, he said that he wanted everybody who's running for office in the state to take a position on it, and he seemed eager to advance it. He rolled it out at a time when it seemed like he was trying to, he was getting a lot of criticism over his coronavirus response, and it was seemed like he was trying to change the narrative a little bit and maybe score some points with his base, who was very concerned about some of the lawlessness and looting and property destruction that had followed in the wake of some of these racial justice protests, not necessarily in Florida, but in some other places. And so, that was sort of a high profile issue at the time. And he seemed to be interested in sort of, grabbing onto that and getting some attention for it. I don't know how big of a priority it will be for him this session, but I assume that he's going to stick with it. And I think it'll be a pretty big debate. Like you said, a lot of people, a lot of Democrats especially, but I've talked to some Republicans who have concerns about the bill and concerns that it would restrict people's civil liberties. The right to peaceably assemble and protest and express your grievances against the government is a pretty sacred right in this country. And I think there are some concerns that this would go too far in terms of limiting what people could do in terms of peacefully protesting. It would make it a felony to block the street. For example, during a protest, we saw a lot of these protests where people were marching down the middle of the street. Some of them with police here in Sarasota, they had the police actually helped and blocked off the streets to make sure that, there wasn't problems with protesters, coming into conflict with cars and traffic and things like that. So under DeSantis's bill, you know, that would be illegal if you blocked a street during a protest. I mean, it already is illegal, but he would make it a felony, and you know, it was already overlooked during a lot of these protests. But you know, there was other provisions in that bill that people said, you know, in terms of you know, cracking down on if there was any property destruction in a protest of more than a handful of people, that you would have pretty serious penalties. And you know, I'm not sure, you know, if the bill does advance, that it would include that it would advance in its current form, because it does seem like there is some bipartisan concerns about it.
What else are you keeping an eye on in this legislative session?
You know, we've touched on a lot of the big issues, but, you know, there is a chance that water quality could continue to get some attention. You know, we haven't seen big red tide blooms so far this year, but there have been some smaller patchier blooms. And that's always an issue that sort of lingers out there. That people have a lot of concerns about, you know, if you have the devastation that's been wrought by this virus, if you put something like red tide on top of that, or other algae blooms in the Caloosahatchee and St. Lucie rivers, that could be really devastating for the economy. So I wouldn't be surprised to see, you know, some continued attention to things like water quality. I think one interesting thing will be whether these toll roads that were approved under the previous legislative leadership continue. They were very controversial, opposed by many environmental groups. You know, for people who didn't follow that closely, the legislature approved three new toll roads, one that would go from the Lakeland area down to Naples, one that would extend the Suncoast Parkway north of Tampa all the way up past I-10 to the Georgia border, and another that would connect, you know, kind of a connector road. And these are really viewed by environmentalists as sort of roads to nowhere that, you know, didn't have a lot of need, and that were being pushed to some extent by, you know, road builders and contractors and, you know, economic development folks, without much proof that there was sort of a demand for these roads. And the new legislative leadership, particularly, there's been discussion that Senate President Wilton Simpson might not be as interested in funding some of these roads. That's kind of what I've heard. So it's not clear that these are going to continue. And the new legislative leadership, and the fact that the budget is struggling, and that these roads would be expensive, could help environmentalists make their case that these should go away.
All right, Zach, thanks so much for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
That was Zach Anderson, political editor at the Sarasota Herald Tribune. And you can find coverage of Florida politics, including issues in the upcoming legislative session, at WUSFnews.org. That's our show for this week. Denora Prevost is our producer. I'm Bradley George. Thanks for listening to Florida Matters, and I hope you'll join us again next week.